is the present state-of-the-art technique for predicting developments and exploring alternative proposals. The built-in limitations of logic circuits, however, can be transcended by the kinesiologic use of the world's most advanced computer, the human nervous system. Quantum non-locality guarantees that the answers to every question are everywhere present. But this fact in itself is beyond the comprehension or capability of any conventional computer.
Clinical work.
In medicine, the accuracy of diagnosis as well as the efficacy of a prescribed treatment can be tested. The technique is also valuable in psychological issues where the etiology of a disorder can be quickly ascertained. One currently controversial subject of investigation that obviously suggests itself is the area of so-called repressed childhood memories of alleged sexual abuse. Facts can be quickly differentiated from false memories elicited in response to suggestion. Freud concluded that many reports of childhood incest that were reported were actually of hysterical origin, and he stopped believing them. Subsequent investigators then claimed, however, that the statements of these patients were true. Then further research indicated the report that these statements were true were themselves false, etc. Kinesiologic testing can be used to back up clinical judgments as well as scientifically controlled investigation because it can transcend the built-in design limitation of double-blind research, which can of itself create the very error it is supposed to prevent. Statistics are no substitute for truth. And in the complexity of biobehavioral phenomena, proximal antecedents can too easily become classified as ostensible causes. The real supposed cause may be the pull of the future through a hidden attractor field, parenthesis, karma, end of parenthesis.
Education.
A profoundly telling exercise may be performed by evaluating the books in one's library. Simply hold them over the solar plexus and have somebody test your muscle strength. As you do this, you will notice your books will end up in two big piles, the true and the false. Reflection on the differences between the two can produce a revelation. Many testers have found it to be one of the most valuable experiences of their lives. Some even left the two piles there for a long period of time to let the lesson really sink in. It is equally informative to try the same procedure with one's music collection. The negative group will include violent, sexist, rap music, and heavy metal rock. The positive pile will contain classical music, classic rock, the Beatles included. Also country western, reggae, and popular romantic ballads will be found to be positive.
Spirituality.
Though this chapter has dealt primarily with secular uses of the tool, it should be pointed out that applications of the technique can be profoundly spiritual. We may, for instance, test the contrasting statements, I am a body, as compared to I have a body. Appropriate questions proceeding from this point can resolve one's most basic fears. All limiting self-definitions create fear because they create vulnerability. Our perceptions are essentially distorted by our own self-definition, which in turn is qualified by identifying with our limitations. Error occurs when we cling to the belief that I am that. Truth is unveiled when we see that one has that or does that instead of being that. There is great freedom in the realization that I have a body and a mind rather than I am my body or my mind. Once the fear of death is transcended, life becomes a transformed experience because that particular fear underlies all others. Few people know what it is to live without fear. But beyond fear lies joy, as the meaning and purpose of existence becomes transparent. Once this realization occurs, life becomes effortless, and the sources of suffering dissolve. Suffering is only the price we pay for our attachments. Empirical issues, however, are involved even in spiritual quests. In the matter of spiritual teachers, Americans are extremely naive, partly because spiritual pursuit does not have a long tradition here, as it does in older cultures. That the world abounds with false gurus is well known in India, but such cynicism does not come readily to Americans. Fakes repeatedly come out of India with impressive presentations and hoodwink naive Western spiritual aspirants who, in their childlike trust, leave home and hearth, sell their belongings, and follow the charismatic spiritual con man down a path to eventual disillusionment. The acumen of some of these gurus can be dazzling, and their capacity to mimic a convincing sincerity is amazing. They often take in even sophisticated spiritual seekers. This is spiritual seduction, a mixture of truth and falsehood blended into a slick package. The teachings sound valid if one cannot see that their truth has been distorted by a false context. Such spiritual exploitation is routinely exposed in India, where these media-hungry frauds are held in low regard and often confined to their quarters by the government should they return home. Such so-called teachers can inflict terrible suffering and tragedy. The most catastrophic depressions in clinical practice have occurred in people who have discovered that they have been spiritually deceived or raped. Such disillusionment and pain is far more severe than that which results from other losses in life, and recovery has not always been possible. The charm of all false prophets is persuasiveness, but use of the testing method herein described provides a foolproof safeguard against such deception. It is informative to watch TV evangelists with the sound turned off and have somebody test you. False gurus also make everyone go weak in a dramatic fashion. It is as though the universe considers spiritual rape an especially grave error. What of a true teacher? In the first place, a universal hallmark is that the true teacher never controls anyone's life in any way, instead merely explains how to advance consciousness. If we do the test, though, we will find, for instance, that Mother Teresa, recognized by the world through the Nobel Prize, calibrated at 700, as did the acknowledged Indian spiritual saint Ramana Maharshi. He went into a state of enlightenment at age 16, never left the mountain where he lived, and led a life of humble simplicity, and disregarded money, prestige, and followers, and would have remained unknown had not a well-known American writer's description of Ramana's enlightened state brought seekers from all over the world. Nowhere is spiritual fraud more prevalent than in the world of channelers and psychics. It is informative to check out the level of truth these mediums express, as well as the level of the supposed source on the other side. Sometimes a surprisingly high level of truth is in fact being taught. A level of truth which calibrates at 500 is worth listening to, regardless of its origin, because the inability to love is at the root of most human problems. Beyond the level of 500, material possessions and worldly needs becomes irrelevant, which is why true teachers neither seek nor desire material gain. Appropriate use of the system will always lead to self-discovery and growth. Eventually, it can lead us to compassion for everyone when we see how we all must struggle with the downside of human nature. Everyone is crippled in some area, and everyone is somewhere on the path of evolution, some ahead of us and some behind. In the steps we have walked are the old lessons of life, and before us are the new teachings to be learned. In actuality, there is nothing to feel guilty about and nothing to blame. There is no one to hate, but there is that which is better avoided, and such blind alleys will become increasingly apparent. Everyone has chosen their own level of consciousness, yet nobody could have done otherwise at any given point in time. We can only get there from here. Every leap has to have a platform from which to originate. Pain exists to promote evolution. Its cumulative effect finally forces us in a new direction, though the mechanism may be very slow. How many times is it necessary to hit bottom before a lesson is learned? Perhaps thousands, which may account for the sheer quantity of human suffering, so vast as to be incomprehensible. Slowly, by inches, does civilization advance. It is an interesting exercise to use our technique to reassess our society's scapegoats. For example, to calibrate the current power level of the UN and then ask what level would be required to successfully do the job for which it was designed. When we see such discrepancies spelled out in plain numbers, we may stop berating ourselves and blaming institutions, realizing they often simply do not have the requisite power to accomplish their expected tasks. Condemnation disappears with understanding, as does guilt. All judgment reveals itself to be self-judgment in the end, And when this is understood, our larger comprehension of the nature of life takes its place. That which is injurious loses its capacity to harm when it is brought into the light. And now nothing need remain hidden. Every thought, action, decision, or feeling creates an eddy in the interlocking, interbalancing, ever-moving energy fields of life, leaving a permanent record for all of time. This realization can be intimidating when it first dawns on us, but it becomes a springboard for rapid evolution. In this interconnected universe, every improvement we make in our private world improves the world at large for everyone. We all float on the collective level of consciousness of mankind, so that any increment we add comes back to us. We all add to our common buoyancy by our efforts to benefit life. What we do to benefit life automatically benefits all of us, because we are all included in that which is life. We are life. It is a scientific fact that what is good for you is good for me. Simple kindness to oneself and all that lives is the most powerful transformational force of all. It produces no backlash, has no downside, and never leads to loss or despair. It increases one's own true power without exacting any toll. But to reach maximum power, such kindness can permit no exceptions, nor can it be practiced with the expectation of some selfish gain or reward, and its effect is as far-reaching as it is subtle. In a universe where like goes to like and birds of a feather fly together, we attract to us that which we emanate. Consequences may come in an unsuspected way. For instance, we are kind to the elevator man, and a year later a helpful stranger gives us a hand on a deserted highway. An observable this does not cause an observable that. Instead, in reality, a shift in motive or behavior acts on a field which then produces an increased likelihood of positive responses. Our inner work is like building up a bank account, but one from which we cannot draw at our own personal will. The disposition of the funds is determined by a subtle energy field, which awaits a trigger to release this power back into our own lives. Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol is the story of all our lives. We all are Scrooge. We are all like Tiny Tim. All of us are selfish and lame in some areas. We are all victims like Bob Cratchit, and we are all as indignantly moralistic as Mrs. Cratchit, refusing to toast Scrooge. The ghost of Christmas past haunts all of our lives. The spirit of Christmases to come beckons us on to make the choices that will enhance both our own existence and that of others. If we calibrate the energy level of Christmas, by the way, it becomes obvious that power resides within the human heart itself. All avenues of questioning lead to the same ultimate answer. The discovery that nothing is hidden and truth stands everywhere revealed is the key to enlightenment about the simplest practical affairs and the destiny of mankind. In the process of examining our everyday lives, we can find that all our fears have been based on falsehood. The displacement of the false by the true is the essence of the healing of all things visible and invisible. And always the final question will eventually arise from every questioner. The biggest question of all, who am I?
Chapter 8, The Source of Power.
The ultimate object of our investigation is a practical rather than an academic or philosophic understanding, although certain philosophic conclusions can immediately be drawn from even a brief analysis of power and force. From a practical viewpoint, before proceeding, we need to know what is the intrinsic source of power and how it operates. What accounts for its greater strengths? Why is it that force always eventually succumbs to power? In this respect, the Declaration of Independence can provide a rewarding study. The document itself calibrates at about 700. If one goes through it sentence by sentence, the source of its power appears. It is the concept that all men are equal by virtue of the divinity of their creation, and human rights are therefore intrinsic to human creation, and therefore inalienable. Interestingly enough, this is the same concept that was the source of Mahatma Gandhi's power. On examination, we will see that power arises from meaning. It has to do with motive, and it has to do with principle. Power is always associated with that which supports the significance of life itself. It appeals to that in human nature which we call noble, in contrast to force, which appeals to that which we call crass. Power appeals to that which uplifts and dignifies, that which ennobles. Force must always be justified, whereas power requires no justification. Force is associated with the partial and power with the whole. If we analyze the nature of force, it becomes readily apparent why it must always succumb to power. This is in accordance with one of the basic laws of physics. Because force automatically creates counterforce, its effect is limited by definition. We could say that force is a movement. It goes from here to there, or tries to go from here to there against opposition. Power, on the other hand, stands still. It is like a standing field that does not move. Gravity itself, for instance, does not move against anything, yet its power moves all objects within its field. The gravity field itself, however, does not move. Force always moves against something, whereas power does not move against anything. Force is intrinsically incomplete and therefore has to constantly be fed energy. Power is total and complete in and of itself and requires nothing from outside of itself. It makes no demands. It has no needs. Because force has an insatiable appetite, one might say, it constantly consumes. Power, in contrast, energizes, gives forth, supplies, and supports. Power gives life and energy. Force takes these away. We notice that power is associated with compassion and makes us feel positive about ourselves. Force is associated with judgmentalism and tends to make us feel badly about ourselves. Force always creates counterforce. Its effect is to polarize rather than to unify. Polarization always implies conflict. Its cost, therefore, is always high. Because force incites polarization, it inevitably produces a win-lose dichotomy. And because somebody always loses, enemies are always created. Constantly faced with enemies, force requires constant defense. Defensiveness is costly, invariably, whether in the marketplace, politics, or international affairs. In looking for the source of power, we have noted that it is associated with meaning, and that this meaning has to do with the significance of life itself. Force is concrete, literal, and arguable. It requires proof and support. The sources of power, however, are beyond argument and are not subject to proof. The self-evident is not arguable. That health is more important than disease, that life is more important than death, that honor is preferable to dishonor, that faith and trust are preferable to doubt and cynicism, that the constructive is preferable to the destructive, are all self-evident statements, not subject to proof. Ultimately, the only thing we can say about a source of power is that it just is. Every civilization is characterized by neither principles. If the principles of a civilization are noble, it succeeds. If they are selfish, it falls. As the term principles may sound abstract, but the consequences of principle are quite concrete. If we examine principles, we will see that they reside in an invisible realm within consciousness itself. Although we can point out examples of honesty in the world, honesty itself as an organizing principle central to civilization is nowhere independently existent in the external world. True power, then, emanates from consciousness itself. What we see is a visible manifestation of the invisible. Pride, nobility of purpose, sacrifice for quality of life, all such things are considered inspirational and give life significance. But what actually inspires us in the physical world are things that symbolize concepts which have powerful meanings for us. Such symbols realign our motives with abstract principles. A symbol can marshal great power because of the principle which already resides within our own consciousness. Meaning is so important that when life loses meaning, suicide commonly ensues. When life loses meaning, we first go into depression. Then life becomes less meaningful, and finally we leave it. Force has transient goals. When those goals are reached, there remains the emptiness of meaninglessness. Power, on the other hand, motivates us endlessly. If our lives are dedicated, for instance, to enhancing the welfare of others and everyone we contact, our lives can never lose meaning. If the purpose of our life, on the other hand, is merely financial success, what happens after that has been attained? This is one of the primary ideologies and causes of depression in middle-aged men and women. The disillusionment of emptiness comes from failing to align one's life with the principles from which power emanates. A good illustration of this phenomenon can be seen in the lives of great musicians, composers, and musical conductors of our own times. How frequently they continue productive careers into their 80s and even 90s, often having children and living vigorously until ripe old age. Their lives have been dedicated to the creation and embodiment of beauty. Beauty incorporates and expresses enormous power. We know clinically that alignment with beauty is associated with longevity and vigor. Because beauty is a function of creativity, such longevity is common in all creative occupations. The philosophic position of reductive materialism, based on the premise that nothing is real unless it is quantifiable, is endemic in the sciences. The source of power, however, is invisible and intangible. The sophistry of logical empiricism is clear from its essential premise. To say that nothing is real unless it is measurable is already an abstract position, is it not? This proposition itself is nowhere tangible, neither visible nor measurable. The argument of tangibility is itself created from the intangible. Even if such a position were valid, who would want to live without pride, without honor, without love, compassion, or value? Despite the pathetic implications of this argument, let us nevertheless address it. Does power have any tangible basis? Does it proceed exclusively from the undefinable, the so-called mystical, the philosophic, the spiritual, the abstract? Is there anything more we can know about power that would make sense to those who are oriented only to that left-brain world which, regardless of its computerized sophistication, remains only a system of mechanical measurements? Before we proceed, let us remind ourselves that the most advanced artificial intelligence machines in the world are unable to feel joy or happiness. Force can bring satisfaction, but only power brings joy. Victory over others brings us satisfaction, but victory over ourselves brings us joy. But as previous chapters have shown, not only can these qualities now be measured, they can be actually calibrated. To make this fact more comprehensible to reason, let us continue our tour through some easily understood concepts from advanced theoretical physics. We need not be intimidated by these concepts. On the contrary, their implications for daily life, although profound, are quite simple. We don't have to understand the molecular structure of rubber in order to benefit from having tires on our cars. Though their proofs may be complex, Einstein's theory of relativity, Bell's theorem, and so on can all be stated in a few easily understandable sentences. Several recently defined concepts have relevance in understanding of the nature of power. One is physicist David Bohm's theory that states there is both a visible and an invisible universe. This idea should not be daunting. Many things with which we are familiar, such as X-rays, radio, and TV waves, are not visible either. An enfolded universe runs parallel to the visible unfolded universe, which is itself merely a manifestation of that enfolded invisible universe. Thus, for instance, did the idea of building the world's tallest building marshal support and eventually result in an invisible concept, which eventually became the Empire State Building within the visible world. The enfolded universe is connected with human consciousness, as inspiration arises in the mind of the Creator. Bohm says meaning links mind and matter like opposite sides of a coin. Another useful concept is Rupert Sheldrake's notion of morphogenetic fields, or M fields. These invisible organizing patterns act like energy templates to establish forms on various levels of life. It is because of the discreteness of M fields that identical representations of a species are produced. Something similar to M fields also exists in the energy fields of consciousness and underlies thought patterns and images, a phenomenon called formative causation. The idea that M fields assist learning has been verified by wide-scale experimentation. When Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, he created a new M field. The belief system prevailing in human consciousness had been that the 4-minute mile was a limit of human possibility. Once the new M field was created, many runners suddenly began to break the 4-minute mile records. This occurs every time mankind breaks into a new paradigm, whether it is the capacity to fly, an M field created by the Wright brothers, or the capacity to recover from alcoholism, an M field created by the famous Bill W., the founder of AA. Once an M field is created, everyone who repeats the accomplishment reinforces the power of that M field. We are all familiar with the fact that new ideas often seem to arise in the minds of several people far removed at the same time. Somehow, the M field acts as an organizing principle, like a sort of general magnetic attraction. An M field does not have to move anywhere. It is a standing energy field, which is everywhere present. Once it is created, it exists as a universally available pattern throughout the invisible universe. The next concept we need to consider in more detail is so-called chaos theory, nonlinear dynamics. Its first application was in the prediction of weather, the study of which over the centuries had established the consensus that there was no definable, predictable, mathematical pattern to weather, just as it had also been determined that there was no mathematical way to prove when a dripping faucet will drip, or even to explain how a droplet is formed. Chaos merely means a mass of apparently meaningless data, for instance, a bunch of dots, in which one cannot see any inherent organizing pattern. With the advent of advanced computer technology, it was discovered that inner organizing patterns could be found by computer analysis in what looked like disorganized data, and that which appears to be incoherent actually has an inner hidden coherence. Such analysis revealed patterns which often looked like the figure 8 folded back upon itself, frequently with a funnel effect, so that the graphic itself has a repeatable geometric configuration. What science has realized is what mystics have claimed throughout the centuries, that the universe is indeed coherent, unified, and organized around unifying patterns. Nonlinear dynamics has verified that there really is no chaos in the universe. The appearance of disorder is merely a function of limits of perception. This came as a disturbing revelation to left-brain people, but seems self-evident to right-brain people. Creative people merely write, paint, sculpt, or design what they already see within their own minds. We don't dance from logic, we dance from feeling patterns. We make our choices from values, and values are associated with intrinsic patterns. The accepted chain of causality, as commonly understood in the basic sciences, occurs as the well-known sequence of A causes B causes C. In this scheme of material determinism, nothing is inherently free, but only the results of something else. It is thereby limited. What this system really defines is the world of force. Force A results in force B, which is then transmitted to force C, with consequences at point D, etc. D in turn becomes the beginning of another series of chain reactions, ad infinitum. This is the left brain world, mundane and predictable. It is the limited paradigm from which the conventional sciences operate, chartable, familiar, controllable, but uncreative, determined and therefore limited by the past. It is not the world of genius, but to many it feels safe. It is the world of productivity and practicality, T To creative people, however, it seems pedestrian, prosaic, uninspiring, and limiting. It is one thing to conceive of the Empire State Building, but something else to make it happen. To make a thing happen requires motivation, and motivation is derived from meaning. Therefore, the visible and invisible worlds are linked together as we have already diagrammed it. ABC cascading down to the appearance of a sequence, A causing B causing C. Here we see that the concept ABC, which is within the invisible enfolded universe, will activate emergence into the visible world to result in that sequence, A arrow B arrow C. Thus, the visible world is created from the invisible world and is therefore influenced by the future. The capacity of the invisible concept to materialize is based on the power of the original concept itself. We might say that the right brain gets the pattern and the left brain makes it visible. An ABC may be either a high-energy attractor or a low-energy attractor. Certain concepts and values apparently have much greater power than others. Thus far, science has only defined that attractors may have either high or low energy. Simply stated, powerful attractor patterns make us go strong, and weak patterns make us go weak. Some ideas are so weakening that merely holding them in mind makes a test subject unable to keep up their arm at all. Other concepts are so powerful that when they are held in mind, it is impossible to force down the subject's arm with any amount of exertion. This is a universal clinical observation. Powerful patterns are associated with health. Weak patterns are associated with sickness, disease, and even death. If you hold forgiveness in mind, your arm will go very strong. If you hold revenge in mind, your arm will go weak. For our purposes, it is really only necessary to recognize that power is that which makes you go strong, and that force makes you go weak. In contrast, love, compassion, and forgiveness, which may be seen by some mistakenly as being submissive, are in fact profoundly empowering. Revenge, judgmentalism, and condemnation, on the other hand, inevitably make one go weak. Therefore, regardless of moral righteousness, it is a simple clinical fact that in the long run, the weak cannot prevail against the strong. That which is weak falls of its own accord. Individuals of great power throughout human history have been those who have totally aligned themselves with powerful attractors. Again and again, they have stated that the power they manifested was not of their own making, was not of themselves. Each has attributed the source of the power to something greater than themselves. All of the great teachers throughout the history of our species have merely taught one thing over and over. In whatever language, at whatever time, all have said simply, give up weak attractors for strong attractors. In examining these attractors, we will notice that some weak patterns tend to imitate, in form only, more powerful patterns. These we will call imitators. Thus the German people under the Third Reich were deceived by that which appeared to be patriotism with a capital P, but was really nationalism with a small p. The demagogue or the zealot tries to sell us imitators as the real thing. Demagogues, to this end, put forth a great deal of rhetoric. In contrast, those who move from power need say very little.
Part 2. Work. Chapter 9. Power Patterns in Human Attitudes.
The ability to differentiate between high and low energy patterns is a matter of perception and discrimination that most of us learn by painful trial and error. Failure, suffering, and eventual sickness result from the influence of weak patterns. In contrast, success, happiness, and health proceed from powerful patterns. Therefore, it is well worth taking a few minutes to scan the list of contrasting patterns which have been researched and calibrated to determine their respective criteria. This listing is an educational tool which operates from the principle of closure. Reflection on the many contrasting pairs of qualities itself can initiate a consciousness-raising process so that one gradually becomes aware of patterns operating in relationships, business affairs, and all the various interactions that make up the fabric of life. On the left side of the page are adjectives describing powerful positive patterns, which calibrate above 200. On the right side of the page are weak negative patterns, which calibrate below 200. We can start with abundance and then see that in contrast, there's that which is excessive. We can see the power of accepting as compared to the weakness of rejecting. We see the power of admitting in contrast to denying. We see the value of that which is aesthetic in contrast to that which is merely artsy. We see the power of being agreeable rather than being condescending. We see the value of allowing rather than controlling, being appreciative rather than envious, of being approving rather than critical, of attraction versus seduction. We see the value of authoritative rather than dogmatic, of being aware rather than preoccupied. We see the value of being balanced rather than extreme. We see the value of the beautiful rather than that which is only glamorous. And profoundly, we see the value of beingness in contrast to just havingness. We see the power of believing rather than insisting, brilliant rather than clever, candid rather than calculating, carefree rather than frivolous, challenged rather than impeded, charitable instead of prodigal, cheerful rather than manic, cherishing instead of prizing, choosing to instead of having to, the value of being civil rather than just formal, concerned rather than judgmental, conciliatory rather than inflexible. We see the value of being confident rather than arrogant, confronting rather than harassing. We see the value of being conscious rather than unaware, of being considerate rather than indulgent, of being constructive rather than destructive, of contending rather than competing, of being courageous rather than reckless, defending rather than attacking, democratic rather than dictatorial, detached rather than removed, determined in contrast to stubborn. We see the value of being devoted rather than just possessive, of being diplomatic rather than deceptive, of doing rather than getting, of educating rather than persuading. We see the value of that which is egalitarian rather than elitist, empathetic rather than pitying, encouraging rather than promoting, energetic rather than just agitated, enlivening rather than exhausting, envisioning rather than picturing, equal rather than superior, erotic instead of lustful, essential rather than just apparent, eternal in contrast to that which is transitory and temporal, ethical versus equivocal, excellence versus adequacy, experienced rather than cynical, fair in contrast to scrupulosity, fertile in contrast to luxuriant, flexible instead of rigid, forgiving instead of condemning, free instead of regulated, generous instead of petty, gentle instead of rough, gifted instead of just lucky, giving is greater than taking, global versus local, gracious rather than decorous, grateful rather than indebted, harmonious rather than disruptive, healing rather than irritating, helpful instead of meddling, holistic instead of just analytic, honest instead of just cash register legal, honoring instead of enshrining, humble instead of diffident, and humorous versus somber, impartial versus righteous, ingenious instead of scheming, inspired instead of mundane, intentional instead of calculating, intuitive in contrast to literal, inventive instead of prosaic. You see the value of inviting rather than urging, being involved instead of obsessed, joyful instead of just pleasurable, just instead of punitive, kind instead of cruel, leading instead of coercing, liberating rather than restricting, long-term rather than just immediate, loyal instead of chauvinistic, merciful instead of permissive, modest instead of haughty, natural instead of artificial, noble rather than pompous, nurturing rather than draining, and observant instead of suspicious. We see the value of being open rather than secretive, optimistic rather than pessimistic, orderly in contrast to confused, outgoing instead of reserved, patient instead of avid, patriotic instead of nationalistic, peaceful instead of belligerent, polite rather than obsequious, powerful rather than forceful. We see the value of praising instead of flattering, principled rather than just expediency, to be privileged in contrast to entitled, to be prolific in contrast to barren, purposeful instead of desirous, receiving instead of grasping, releasing, freeing instead of tenacious, reliant instead of dependent, requesting instead of demanding, respectful instead of demeaning, responsible instead of guilty, satisfied instead of sated, selective instead of being exclusive, serene in contrast to just being dull, serving in contrast to ambition, and sharing in contrast to hoarding. We see significance instead of importance, sober instead of intoxicated, spontaneous instead of impulsive, spiritual versus materialistic, steadfast instead of faltering, striving instead of struggling, surrendering instead of worrying, tender versus being hard, thoughtful rather than pedantic, thrifty rather than just cheap, timeless instead of faddish, tolerant instead of prejudiced, tractable in contrast to contrary, trusting rather than gullible, truthful versus falsehood, unifying rather than dividing, unselfish in contrast to self-seeking, valuing instead of exploitive, virtuous instead of just being celebrated, and warm rather than feverish. Simply having heard this list or being exposed to it, you are no longer exactly the same person you were before. Merely to become acquainted with the differences between these polarities begins to increase one's inner power. With these distinctions in mind, we will start to notice things we never observed before. Such revelations occur because, as we discover, the universe favors power. Moreover, the universe does not forget. There are many sides to the question of karma, but every choice of who and how to be is a choice of great consequence. All our choices reverberate through the ages. Thousands of reports of near-death experiences have been reported over the centuries, as currently reflected in such bestsellers as Brinkley's Saved by the Light or B.J. Eddy's Embraced by the Light, which calibrated at 595, and therefore confirm that we shall eventually have to accept responsibility for every thought, word, and deed we beget and re-experience exactly whatever suffering we have caused others. It is in this sense that we each create our own heaven or hell. The universe holds its breath as we choose, instant by instant, which pathway to follow. For the universe, the very essence of life itself, is highly conscious. Every act, thought, and choice adds to a permanent mosaic. Our decisions ripple through the universe of consciousness to affect the lives of all. Lest this idea be considered either merely mystical or fanciful, let us remember that fundamental tenet of the new theoretical physics: everything in the universe is connected with everything else. Our choices reinforce the formation of powerful M-fields, which are the attractor patterns that influence others. Even if one sits isolated in a cave, his thoughts influence others, whether he wishes it or not. Every act or decision you make that supports life supports all of life, including your own. The ripples we create return to us. This, which may once have seemed a metaphysical statement, is now established as a scientific, confirmable fact. Everything in the universe constantly gives off an energy pattern of a specific frequency, which remains for all time, and can be read by those who know how. Every word, deed, and intention creates a permanent record. Every thought is known and recorded forever. There are no secrets, nothing is hidden, nor can it be. Our spirits stand naked in time for all to see. Everyone's life, finally, is accountable to the universe.
Chapter 10. Power in Politics.
To better understand the critical difference between force and power, and the implications of this distinction for our own lives, it is helpful to examine human behavior on a larger scale. The interactions of men and governments provide many clear illustrations. Looking at history from our unique perspective, we will, of course, be reminded of the powerful example set by the American Revolution, which first formally established freedom as an inalienable right, setting a precedent for centuries to come. Principles which calibrate as high as 700 affect mankind over great courses of time. The pen is indeed mightier than the sword, because power originates from the mind, whereas force is rooted only in the material world. A related pivotal event in global history, to which we have already referred and we will again, came about in this century through the power of a solitary person, Mahatma Gandhi, a 90-pound so-called colored, who single-handedly overcame the British Empire, which was then the greatest force in the world, ruling two-thirds the face of the globe. Gandhi not only brought the British Empire to its knees, he effectively rang down the curtain on the centuries-old drama of colonialization, and he did it by simply standing for a principle, that is, the intrinsic dignity of man and his right to freedom, sovereignty, and self-determination. Fundamental to this principle, in Gandhi's view, was the fact that such rights derive to man by virtue of the divinity of his creation. Gandhi believed that human rights are not granted by an earthly power, but are inherent in the nature of man himself because they are inherent as a consequence of his creation. Violence is force, and because Gandhi was aligned with power rather than force, he forbade all use of violence in his cause. And because he expressed universal principles, which calibrated 700, he was able to unite the will of the people. When the will of the people is so united and aligned with universal principles, it is virtually unconquerable. Colonialism, which calibrates at 175, is founded on self-interest of the ruling country. Gandhi demonstrated for the world to witness the power of selflessness versus the force of self-interest. The same principle has now been demonstrated quite dramatically in South Africa by Nelson Mandela. Power accomplishes with ease that which force is unable to accomplish, even with extreme effort. Thus, in our own time, we have seen the almost effortless toppling of communism as a governmental form. After half a century of the most ominous and ineffectual military confrontation of history, the political naivete of the Russian people, who are long used to the tyrannical rule of the czars, did not allow them the civic wisdom to understand that in the name of communism, a totalitarian dictatorship was actually being established. Similarly, the German people were deceived by Hitler, who rose to power in the name of National Socialism, only to establish a virtual tyranny. A distinctive characteristic of force in politics is that it cannot tolerate dissent. Both rulers depended on the pervasive use of force through secret police. Stalin, who also put millions to death, relied on the KGB, as Hitler had the Gestapo. Adolf Hitler assembled the greatest military machine the world had ever seen. On the simple level of force, his military was unbeatable, yet he could not defeat a tiny island across the English Channel because of the power expressed by Winston Churchill, who unified the will of his people through principles of freedom and selfless sacrifice. Churchill, parentheses, who calibrated 510 in the parentheses, stood for power. Hitler stood for force. When the two meet, power always eventually succeeds in the long run if it is deeply founded in the will of the people Power is immune to force. Force is seductive because it emanates a certain glamour, whether that glamour is manifested in the guise of false patriotism, prestige, or dominance, while true power very often is quite unglamorous. What could be more glamorous than the Luftwaffe and Waffen-SS of Nazi Germany during the Second World War? These elite branches embodied romance, privilege, and style, and certainly had at their disposal enormous force, the most advanced weapons of the day, and an esprit de corps that cemented their might. Such is the glamour of the formidable. The weak are attracted to, and will even die, for the glamour of force. How else could something so outrageous as war even occur? Force often seizes the upper hand temporarily, and the weak are attracted by those who seem to have overcome weakness. How else could dictatorship be possible? One characteristic of force is arrogance. Power is characterized by humility. Force is pompous. It has all the answers. Power, in contrast, is unassuming. Stalin, who studied military supremacy, has gone down in history as an arch criminal. In contrast, the more humble Mikhail Gorbachev, who wore a plain suit and easily admitted to faults, was awarded the Nobel Prize for Peace. Many political systems and social movements begin with true power, but as time goes on, become co-opted by self-seekers and end up relying increasingly on force until they finally fall in disgrace. The history of civilization demonstrates this repeatedly. It is easy to forget that the initial appeal of communism was idealistic humanitarianism, as was that of the union movement in the United States, until it became a refuge of petty politicians. To fully comprehend the dichotomy we are discussing, it is necessary to consider the difference between a politician and a statesman. The politician, operating out of expediency, rules by force after gaining his position through the force of persuasion and rhetoric, and often calibrates at less than 200. Statesmen, on the other hand, represent true power, rule by inspiration, teach by example, and stand for self-evident principles. The statesman invokes the nobility which resides within all men and unifies them through what can best be described as the heart. Though the intellect is easily fooled, the heart recognizes truth. Where the intellect is limited, the heart is unlimited. Where the intellect is intrigued by the temporary, the heart is only concerned with the permanent.
This concludes Disc 3. Disc 4, Chapter 10, Power in Politics Continued.
Force often relies upon rhetoric, propaganda, and specious argument to garner support and disguise underlying motivations. One characteristic of truth, though, is that it needs no defense. It is self-evident. That all men are created equal requires no justification or rhetorical persuasion. That it is wrong to gas people to death in concentration camps is self-evident. It requires no argument. The principles upon which true power is based do not require vindication, as force invariably does. There are always endless arguments about whether force is justified or not. It is clear that power is associated with that which supports life, and force is associated with that which exploits life for the gain of an individual or an organization. Force is divisive, and through that divisiveness weakens, whereas power unifies. Force polarizes. The jingoism that has such obvious internal appeal to a militaristic nation just as obviously alienates the rest of the world. Power attracts, whereas force repels. Because power unifies, it has no true enemies, though its manifestations may be opposed by opportunists whose ends it does not serve. Power serves others, whereas force is self-serving. The true statesman serves the people. The politician exploits people to serve their own ambitions. The statesman sacrifices himself to serve others. The politician sacrifices others to serve himself. Power appeals to our higher nature and force to our lower nature. Force is limited, whereas power is unlimited. Through its insistence that the end justifies the means, force sells out freedom for expediency. Force offers quick, easy solutions. In power, the means and the end are the same, but but ends require greater maturity, discipline, and patience to be brought to fruition. Great leaders inspire us to have faith and confidence because of the power of their absolute integrity and alignment with inviolate principles. Such figures understand that you cannot compromise principle and still retain your power. Winston Churchill never needed to use force with the British people. Gorbachev brought about total revolution and the largest political monolith in the world without firing a shot. Gandhi defeated the British Empire without raising a hand in anger. And we might note that the seemingly endless Middle Eastern conflict is not resolvable through violence, but eventually through communication in the long run.
Democracy and the United States of America.
Democracy is eventually being acknowledged universally as the superior form of government. Around the globe, there is a rising call for freedom. Many nations with a heritage of repression are learning the lessons necessary for the establishment of liberty. Following conventional science, historians usually try to explain such sequences of political events through an A causes B causes C causality. This, however, is merely apparent sequential unfolding of something with a much greater power, the ABC attractor pattern out of which a society evolves. The power of the United States or any other democracy arises from the principles upon which it is founded. Thus, we can find the basis of power by examining such documents as the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and such acknowledged expressions of the spirit of democracy as the Gettysburg Address. If we calibrate the relative power of each line of these documents, we find the highest attractor pattern of all, out of which the power of the entire United States government emanates, which is in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The above statement calibrates at 700. These sentiments are echoed in the Gettysburg Address, where Lincoln reminds us that this nation was conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, and that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. This also calibrates at level 700. If we examine the actions and statements of Lincoln himself during the years of the Civil War, we will find with certainty that he was devoid of hatred. He had compassion rather than malice for the South, for he understood better than anyone else that the battle was really between man's higher and lower natures. He therefore represented the self-evident truths he referred to and personally mourned the price that he knew had to be paid. The Declaration of Independence states, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that human rights are endowed by nature of man's creation and are inalienable. They do not derive as a fiat from force, nor are they granted by any temporal ruler. Democracy recognizes the divine right of the ruled rather than just the ruler. It is not a right by virtue of title, wealth, or military superiority, but instead is a profound statement of the essence of man's nature, defining principles intrinsic to human life itself, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Mahatma Gandhi's power base calibrates identically with the power base of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. All are essentially concerned with freedom, liberty, and the equality of all men by virtue of endowment by a divine higher power. Interestingly, if we calibrate the power of the attractor field of theocracy, we find it consistently lower than that of any democracy, which also recognizes the Creator as the ultimate authority. The makers of the Declaration of Independence were astute in drawing a very clear distinction between that which is spiritual and that which is religious, and they must have intuitively, if not rationally, known the marked difference between the power of the two. Religion is often associated with force, sometimes disastrously so, historically and today, whereas spiritual concepts such as loyalty, freedom, and peace do not create strife or conflict, much less war. Spirituality is always associated with nonviolence. If we examine the application of the Bill of Rights today, we find that its power in several areas has dwindled. the right to freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, as well as freedom from cruel and unusual punishment, have both been eroded over the years by expediency. The